This is tape 2, side 1 of the book A Traveler's Narrative, written to illustrate the episode of the Bab by Abdu'l-Bahá, continuing from page 45. Footnote: throughout his writings, the oppressed one refers to Baha'u'lláh himself. O friends, help the oppressed one with well-pleasing virtues and good deeds. Today, let every soul desire to attain the highest station. He must not regard what is in him, but what is in God. It is not for him to regard what shall advantage him, but that whereby the word of God which must be obeyed shall be upraised. The heart must be sanctified from every form of selfishness and lust, for the weapons of the Unitarians and the saints were and are the fear of God. That is the buckler which regardeth man from the arrows of hatred and abomination. Unceasingly hath the standard of piety been victorious, and accounted amongst the most puissant hosts of the world. Thereby do the saints subdue the cities of men's hearts, by the permission of God, the Lord of hosts. Darkness hath encompassed the earth, the lamp which giveth light was and is wisdom. The dictates thereof must be observed under all circumstances, and of wisdom is the regard of place and the utterance of discord according to measure and state. And of wisdom is decision, for man should not accept whatsoever anyone saith. Under all circumstances desire the true one, glorious is his glory, that he will not deprive his servants of the sealed wine and the lights of the name of the self-subsistent. O friends of God, verily the pen of sincerity enjoineth on you the greatest faithfulness. By the life of God, its light is more evident than the light of the sun. In its light and its brightness and its radiance, every light is eclipsed. We desire of God that he will not withhold from his cities and lands the radiant effulgence of the sun of faithfulness. We have directed all in the nights and in the days to faithfulness, chastity, purity, and constancy, and have enjoined good deeds and well-pleasing qualities. In the nights and in the days, the shriek of the pen ariseth and the tongue speaketh, that against the sword the word may arise, and against fierceness, patience, and in place of oppression, submission, and at the time of martyrdom, resignation. For 30 years and more, in all that hath befallen this oppressed community, they have been patient, referring it to God. Every one endowed with justice and fairness hath testified, and doth testify to that which hath been said. During this period, this oppressed one was engaged in good exhortations and efficacious and sufficient admonitions, till it became established and obvious before all that this victim had made himself a target for the arrows of calamity unto the showing forth of the treasures deposited in men's souls. Strife and contest were and are seemly in the beasts of the prey of the earth, but laudable actions are seemly in man. Blessed is the merciful one who createth man and taught him utterance. After all those troubles, neither are the ministers of state content, nor the doctors of the church. Not one soul was found to utter a word for God before the court of His Majesty the King. May God perpetuate His kingdom. There shall not befall us aught save that which God hath decreed unto us. They acted not kindly, nor was there any shortcoming in the display of evil. Justice became like the phoenix, and faithfulness like the philosopher's stone. None spake for the right. It would seem that justice had become hateful to men, and cast forth from all lands like the people of God. Glory be to God. In the episode of the land of Ta, not one spoke for that which God had commanded. Having regard to the display of power and a parade of service in the presence of the king, may God perpetuate his kingdom. They have called good evil, and the reformer a sedition monger. The light of these persons would depict the drop as an ocean, and the mote as the sun. They call the house at Kuyin the strong fortress, and close their eyes to the precipitous truth. They have attacked a number of reformers of the world with a charge of seditiousness. As God liveth, these people had and have no intent, nor hope, save the glory of the state and service to their nation. For God they spoke, and for God they speak, and in the way of God do they journey. O friends, ask of him who is the desire of the denizens of earth, that he will succor his majesty the king. May God perpetuate his kingdom, so that all the dominions of Persia may, by the light of the sun of justice, become adorned with the decoration of tranquility and security. According to statements made, he, at the promptings of his blessed nature, loosed those who were in bonds, and bestowed freedom on the captives. The representation of certain matters before the faces of God's servants is obligatory and natural to the pious, so that the good may be aware and become cognizant thereof. Verily he inspireth whom he pleaseth with what he desireth, and he is the powerful, the ordainer, the knowing, the wise. A word from that land hath reached the oppressed one, which in turn was the cause of wonder. His Highness the Mutamidud Dali, Farhad Mirza, said concerning the imprisoned one that whereof the repetition is not pleasing. This victim consorted very little with him or the like of him. So far as is recollected, on only two occasions did he visit Murg Mohali in Shimaran, where was the abode of the oppressed one. On the first occasion he came one day in the afternoon, and on the second one, Friday morning, returning nigh unto sundown. He knows and is conscious that he should not speak contrary to the truth. If one enter his presence, let him repeat these words before him on behalf of the oppressed one. O Prince, I ask justice and fairness from your Highness concerning that which hath befallen this poor victim. Well is it for that soul whom the doubts of the perverse withhold not from the display of justice, and deprive not of the lights of the luminary of equity. O saints of God, at the end of our discourse we enjoin on you once again chastity, faithfulness, godliness, sincerity, and purity. Lay aside the evil and adopt the good. This is that whereunto you were commanded in the Book of God, the Knowing, the Wise. Well is it with those who practice this injunction. At this moment the pen crieth out, saying, O saints of God, regard the horizon of brightness, and be quit, severed, and free from what is beside this. There is no strength and no power save in God. In short, formerly in all provinces in Persia, accounts and stories concerning this sect diverse and discordant, yea, incompatible with the character of the human race and opposed to the divine endowment, passed on the tongues and in the mouths of men and obtained notoriety. But when their principles acquired fixity and stability, and their conduct and behavior were known and appreciated, the veil of doubt and suspicion fell, the true character of this sect became clear and evident, and it reached the degree of certainty that their principles were unlike men's fancies, and that their foundation differed from the popular opinion and estimate. In their conduct, action, morality, and demeanor was no place for objection. The objection in Persia is to certain of the ideas and tenets of this sect. And from the indications of various circumstances, it hath been observed that the people have acquired belief and confidence in the trustworthiness, faithfulness, and godliness of this sect in all transactions. Let us return to our original topic. During the period of their sojourn in Iraq, these persons became notorious throughout the world. For exile resulted in fame, in such wise that a great number of other parties sought allegiance and union, and devised means of acquiring intimacy with them. But the chief of this sect, discovering the aims of each faction, acted with the utmost consistency, circumspection, and firmness. Reposing confidence in none, he applied himself as far as possible to the admonition of each, inciting and urging them to good resolutions and aims, beneficial to the state and the nation. And this conduct and behavior of the chief acquired notoriety in Iraq. So likewise, during the period of their sojourn in Iraq, certain functionaries of foreign governments were desirous of intimacy, and sought friendly relations with them, but the chief would not agree. Amongst the other strange haps was this, that in Iraq certain of the royal family came to an understanding with these foreign governments, and induced by promises and threats conspired with them. Page 50. But this sect unloosed their tongues in reproach, and began to admonish them, saying, What meanness is this, and what evident treason, that man should, for worldly advantages, personal profit, easy circumstances, or protection of life and property, cast himself into this great detriment and evident loss, and embark in a course of action which will conduce to the greatest abasement, and involve the utmost infamy and disgrace both here and hereafter. One can support any baseness save treason to one's country, and every sin admits of pardon and forgiveness save that of dishonoring one's government and injuring one's nation. and they imagined that they were acting patriotically, displaying sincerity and loyalty, and accounting sacred the duties of fidelity, which noble aim they regarded as moral obligations. So rumors of this were spread abroad through Iraq-e-Arab, and such as wished well to their country loosed their tongues in utter thanks, expressing approval and respect. And it was supposed that these events would be represented in the royal presence. But after a while it became known that certain of the sheikhs at the supreme shrines, who were in correspondence with the court, yea, even with the king, were in secret, continually attributing to this sect strange affinities and relations, imagining that such attempts would conduce to favor at the court, and cause advancement of their condition and rank. And since no one could speak freely on this matter at that court, which is the pivot of justice, whilst just ministers aware of the true state of the case, also regarded silence as their best policy. The Iraq question, though they, through the misrepresentations and rumors, assumed gravity in Tehran, and was enormously exaggerated. But the consul's general, being cognizant of the truth, continued to act with moderation until Mirza Buzurg Khan of Qazvin became consul general in Baghdad. Now, since this person was wont to pass the greater portion of his time in a state of intoxication and was devoid of foresight, he became the accomplice and confederate of those sheikhs in Iraq, and girded up his loins stoutly to destroy and demolish. Such power of description and strength of fingers as he possessed, he employed in making representations and statements. Each day he secretly wrote a dispatch to Tehran, made vows and compacts with the sheikhs, and sent diplomatic notes to His Excellency the Ambassador-in-Chief at Constantinople. But since these statements and depositions had no basis or foundation, they were all postponed and adjourned, until at length these sheikhs convened a meeting to consult with the consul general, assembled a number of learned doctors and great divines in the mosque of the two Qasims, upon them be peace, and having come to an unanimous agreement, wrote to the divines of Karbala, the exalted, and Najaf, the most noble, convoking them all. They came, some knowing, others not knowing. Amongst the latter, the illustrious and expert doctor, the noble and celebrated scholar, the seal of the seekers after the truth, Sheikh Murtada, now departed and assoiled, who was the admitted chief of all, arrived without knowledge of the matter in hand. But so soon as he was informed of their actual designs, he said, "I am not properly acquainted with the essential character of this sect, nor with the secret tenets and hidden theological doctrines of this community. Neither have I hitherto witnessed or perceived in their demeanor or conduct anything at variance with a precipitous book which would lead me to pronounce them infidels. Therefore, hold me excused in this matter, and let him who regards it as his duty take action." Now the design of the sheikhs and the council was a sudden and general attack, but by reason of the non-compliance of the departed sheikh, this scheme proved abortive, resulting indeed only in shame and disappointment. So that concourse of sheikhs, doctors, and common folk which had come from Karbala dispersed. Just at this time, mischievous persons, including even certain dismissed ministers, endeavored on all sides so to influence the sect that they might perchance alter their course and conduct. From every quarter, lying messages and disquieting reports continually flowed one to another in uninterrupted and constant succession to the effect that the deliberate intention of the court of Persia was the eradication, suppression, annihilation, and destruction of this sect. That correspondence was continually being carried on with the local authorities, and that all the Babis in Iraq would shortly be delivered over with bound hands to Persia. But the Babis passed the time in calmness and silence, without in any way altering their behavior and conduct. So when Mirza Buzurg Khan failed to effect and accomplish the designs of his heart by such actions, also he ill-advisedly fell to reflecting how he might grieve and humiliate the Babis. Every day he sought some pretext for offering insult, aroused some disturbance and tumult, and raised up the banner of mischief, until the matter came nigh to culminating in the sudden outbreak of a riot, the lapse of the reins of control from the hand, and the perception of men's hearts into disquietude and perturbation, and their minds into anguish and agony. Now, when the Bhavis found themselves unable to treat this humor by any means, for strive as they would, they were foiled and frustrated, and when they failed to find any remedy for this disorder or any fairness in this flower, they deliberated and hesitated for 9 months, and at length a certain number of them, to stop further mischief, enrolled themselves as subjects of the sublime Ottoman government, that thereby they might assuage this tumult. By means of this device, the mischief was allayed, and the consul withdrew his hand from molesting them. But he notified this occurrence to the royal court in a manner at variance with the facts and contrary to the truth, and together with the confederate sheikhs, applied himself in every way to devices for distracting the senses of the Bhavis. Finally, however, being dismissed and overwhelmed with disaster, he became penitent and sorry. Let us proceed with our original topic. For 11 years, and somewhat over, Baha'u'llah abode in Iraqi Arab. The behavior and conduct of the sect were such that his fame and renown increased, for he was manifest and apparent amongst men, consorted and associated with all parties, and would converse familiarly with doctors and scholars concerning the solution of difficult theological questions and the verification of the true sense of abstruse points of divinity. As is currently reported by persons of every class, he used to please all, whether inhabitants or visitors, by his kindly intercourse and courteous address, and the sort of demeanor and conduct on his part led them to suspect sorcery and account him an adept in the occult sciences. During this period, Mirza Yahya remained concealed and hidden, continuing and abiding in his former conduct and behavior, until when the edict for the removal of Baha'u'llah from Baghdad was issued by His Majesty the Ottoman monarch, Mirza Yahya would neither quit nor accompany him. At one time he meditated setting out for India, at another settling in Turkestan, but being unable to decide on either of these two plans, he finally, at his own wish, set out before all in the garb of a dervish, in disguise and change of raiment, for Kakarouk and Arbil. Thence, by continuous advance, he reached Mosul, where, on the arrival of the main body, he took up his abode and station alongside their caravan. And although throughout this journey the governors and officials observed the utmost consideration and respectfulness, while march and halt were alike dignified and honorable, nevertheless was he always concealed in change of raiment, and acted cautiously, and on the idea that some act of aggression was likely to occur. In this fashion did they reach Constantinople, where they were appointed quarters in the guest house on the part of the glorious Ottoman monarchy. And at first the utmost attention was paid to them in every way. On the third day, because of the straitness of their quarters and the greatness of their numbers, they migrated and moved to another house. Certain of the nobles came to see and converse with them, and these, as is related, behaved with moderation, notwithstanding that many in their assemblies and gatherings continued to condemn and vilify them, saying, "This sect are a mischief to all the world, and destructive of treaties and covenants. They are a source of trouble and baleful to all lands. They have kindled a fire and consumed the earth. And though they be outwardly fair-seeming, yet are they deserving of every chastisement and punishment." Yet still the Bhavis continued to conduct themselves with patience, calmness, deliberation, and constancy, so that they did not, even in self-defense, importune the occupants of high places or frequent the houses of any of the magnates of that kingdom. Whomsoever amongst the great he, Baha, interviewed on his own account, they met, and no word save of sciences and arts passed between them, until certain noblemen sought to guide him, and loosed their tongues in friendly counsel, saying, "To appeal, to state your case, and to demand justice, is a measure demanded by custom." He replied in answer, "Pursuing the path of obedience to the king's command, we have come to this country. Beyond this we neither had nor have any aim or desire that we should appeal and cause trouble. What is now hidden behind the veil of destiny will in the future become manifest. There neither has been nor is any necessity for supplication and importunity. If the enlightened-minded leaders of your nation be wise and diligent, they will certainly make inquiry and acquaint themselves with the true state of this case. If not, then their attainment of the truth is impractical and impossible. Under these circumstances, what need is there for importuning statesmen and supplicating ministers of the court? We are free from every anxiety and ready and prepared for the things predestined to us. Say, all is from God, is a sound and sufficient argument. And if God toucheth thee with a hurt, there is no dispeller, therefore save him, is a healing medicine. After some months, a royal edict was promulgated appointing Adrianople in the district of Romilia as their place of abode and residence. To that city the Babis, accompanied by Turkish officers, proceeded altogether, and there they made their home and habitation. According to statements heard from sundry travelers and from certain great and learned men of that city, they behaved and conducted themselves there also in such wise that the inhabitants of the district and the government officials used to eulogize them, and all used to show them respect and deference. In short, since Baha'u'llah was wont to hold intercourse with the doctors, scholars, magnates, and nobles, thereby obtaining fame and celebrity throughout Romilia, the materials of comfort were gathered together. Neither fear nor dread remained. They reposed on the couch of ease and passed their time in quietude. When one Sayyid Muhammad, by name of Isfahan, one of the followers of the Bab, laid the foundations of intimacy and familiarity with Mirza Yahya, and thereby became the cause of vexation and trouble. In other words, he commenced a secret intrigue, and fell to tempting Mirza Yahya, saying, "The fame of this sect hath risen high in the world, and their name hath become noble. Neither dread nor danger remaineth, nor is there any fear or need for caution before you. Cease then to follow, that thou mayest be followed by the world, and come out from amongst adherents, that thou mayest be celebrated throughout the horizons." Mirza Yahya, too, though lack of reflection and thought as to consequences, and want of experience, became enamored of his words and befooled by his conduct. This one was like the suckling child, and that one became as a much-prized breast. At all events, how much soever some of the chiefs of the sect wrote admonitions and pointed out to him the path of discretion, saying, "For many a year hast thou been nurtured in thy brother's arms, and hast reposed on the pillow of ease and gladness. What thoughts are these which are the results of madness? Be not beguiled by this empty name, which, out of regard for certain considerations, and as a matter of expediency, was bestowed upon thee. Neither seek to be censured by the community." Footnote. Mirza Yahya's title was Subi Ezel, the morning of eternity. Baha'u'llah, in this connection, cites Amos 4, verses 12-13, which says that God maketh the morning darkness. End footnote. Thy rank and worth depend on a word, and thine exaltation and elevation were for a protection and a consideration. Yet still, the more they admonished him, the less did it affect him, and how much soever they would direct him, he continued to account opposition as identical with advantage. Afterwards, too, the fire of greed and avarice was kindled, and although there was no sort of need, their circumstances being easy in the extreme, they fell to thinking of salary and stipend, and certain of the women dependent on Mirza Yahya went to the governor's palace and craved assistance and charity. So when Baha'u'llah beheld such conduct and behavior on his part, he dismissed and drove away both him and Sayyid Muhammad from himself. Then Sayyid Muhammad set out for Constantinople to get his stipend and open the door of suffering. According to the account given, this matter caused the greatest sorrow and brought about cessation of intercourse. In Constantinople, moreover, he presumptuously set afloat certain reports, asserting, amongst other things, that the notable personage who had come from Iraq was Mirza Yahya. Sundry individuals, perceiving that herein was excellent material for mischief-making, and as means for the promotion of mutiny, ostensibly supported and applauded him, and stimulated and incited him, saying, "You are really the chief support and acknowledged successor. Act with authority, in order that grace and blessing may become apparent. The waveless sea hath no sound, and the cloud without thunder raineth no rain." By such speech, then, was that unfortunate man entrapped into his course of action, and led to utter vain words which caused the disturbance of men's thoughts. Little by little those who were wont to incite and encourage began without exception to utter violent denunciations in every nook and corner, nay, in the court itself, saying, "The Babis say thus, and expound them this wise. Their behavior is such, and their speech so-and-so." Such mischief-making and plots caused matters to become misapprehended, and furthermore certain schemes got afloat which were regarded as necessary measures of self-protection. The expediency of banishing the Babis came under consideration, and all of a sudden an order came, and Baha'u'llah was removed from Romelia, nor was it known for what purpose or whether they would bear him away. Diverse accounts were current in men's mouths, and many exaggerations were heard to the effect that there was no hope of deliverance. Now all those persons who were with him, with one accord, entreated and insisted that they should be permitted to accompany him, and how much soever the government admonished and forbade them, it was fruitless. Finally, one Haji Jafar, by name, was moved to lamentation, and with his own hand cut his throat. When the government beheld it thus, it gave permission to all of them to accompany him, convey them from Adrianople to the seashore, and thence transported them to Acre. Mirza Yahya they sent in like manner to Famagusta. During the latter days passed in Adrianople, Baha'u'llah composed a detailed epistle, setting forth all matters clearly and minutely. He unfolded and expounded the main principles of the sect, and made clear and plain its ethics, manners, course, and mode of conduct. He treated certain political questions in detail, and adduced sundry proofs of his truthfulness. He declared the good intent, loyalty, and sincerity of the sect, and wrote some fragments of prayers, some in Persian, but the greater part in Arabic. He then placed it in a packet, and adorned its address with the royal name of His Majesty the King of Persia, and wrote on it that some person, pure of heart and pure of life, dedicated to God, and prepared for martyr sacrifice, must with perfect resignation and willingness convey this epistle into the presence of the king. A youth named Mirza Badi, a native of Khorasan, took the epistle and hastened toward the presence of His Majesty the King. The royal train had its abode and station outside Tehran, so he took his stand alone on a rock in a place far off, but opposite to the royal pavilion, and awaited day and night the passing of the royal escort, or the attainment of admission into the imperial presence. 3 days did he pass in the state of fasting and vigilance, and an emaciated body and enfeebled spirit remained. On the 4th day, the royal personage was examining all quarters and directions with a telescope, when suddenly his glance fell on this man, who was seated in the utmost respectful attitude on a rock. It was inferred from the indications perceived that he must certainly have thanks to offer, or some complaint or demand for redress and justice to prefer. The king commanded one of those in attendance at the court to inquire into the circumstances of this youth. On interrogation, it was found that he carried a letter which he desired to convey with his own hand into the royal presence. On receiving permission to approach, he cried out before the pavilion with a dignity, composure, and respectfulness surpassing description, and in a loud voice, "O king, I have come unto thee from Sheba with a weighty message." The king commanded to take the letter and arrest the bearer. His Majesty the King wished to act with deliberation and desired to discover the truth, but those who were present before him loosed their tongues in violent reprehension, saying, "This person has shown great presumption and amazing audacity, for he hath without fear or dread brought the letter of him against whom all peoples are angered, of him who was banished to Bulgaria and Sclavonia, into the presence of the king. If so be that he do not instantly suffer a grievous punishment, there will be an increase of this great presumption." So the ministers of the court signified that he should suffer punishment and ordered the torture. As the first torment, they applied the chain and rack, saying, "Make known thy other friends that thou mayest be delivered from excruciating punishment, and make thy comrades captive, that thou mayest escape from the torment of the chain and the keenness of the sword." But torture, brand, and torment him as they might, they saw naught but steadfastness and silence, and found naught but dumb endurance on his part. So, when the torture gave no result, they first photographed him, the executioners on his left and on his right, and he sitting bound in fetters and chains beneath the sword with perfect meekness and composure, and then slew him and destroyed him. This photograph I sent for, and found worthy of contemplation, for he was seated with wonderful humility and strange submissiveness in utmost resignation. Now, when His Majesty the King had persuaded certain passages and become cognizant of the contents of the epistle, he was much affected at what had taken place, and manifested regret, because his courtiers had acted hastily and put into execution a severe punishment. It is even related that he said thrice, "Doth anyone punish one who is but the channel of correspondence?" Then the royal command was issued that their reverences, the learned doctors and honorable and accomplished divines, should write a reply to that epistle. But when the most expert doctors of the capital became aware of the contents of the letter, they ordained that this person, without regarding the fact that he is at variance with the precipitous religion, is a meddler with custom and creed, and a troubler of kings and emperors. Therefore, to eradicate, subdue, repress, and repel this sect is one of the requirements of the well-established path, and indeed the chief of obligations. This answer was not approved before the royal presence, for the contents of this epistle had no obvious discordance with the law or with reason, and did not meddle with political or administrative matters, nor interfere with or attack the throne of sovereignty. They ought, therefore, to have discussed the real points at issue, and to have written clearly and explicitly such an answer as would have caused the disappearance of doubts and the solution of difficulties, and would have become a fulcrum for discussion to all. Now of this epistle sundry passages shall be set forth in writing to conduce to a better understanding of the matter by all people. At the beginning of the epistle was a striking passage in the Arabic language, treating of questions of faith and assurance, the sacrifice of life in the way of the beloved, the state of resignation and contentment, the multiplicity of misfortunes, calamities, hardships, and afflictions, and falling under suspicion of seditiousness through the machinations of foes, the establishment of his innocence in the presence of His Majesty the King, the repudiation of seditious persons and disavowal of the rebellious party, the conditions of sincere belief in the verses of the Quran, the needfulness of godly virtue, distinction from all other creatures in this transitory abode, obedience to the commandments and avoidance of things prohibited, the evidence of divine support in the affair of the Bab, the inability of whosoever is upon the earth to withstand a heavenly thing, his own awakening at the divine efflux, and his falling thereby into undoubted calamities, his acquisition of the divine gift, his participation in spiritual God-given grace, and his illumination with immediate knowledge without study, the excusableness of his efforts for the admonition of mankind, their direction toward the attainment of human perfections, and their enkindlement with the fire of divine love, encouragements to the directing of energy towards the attainment of a state greater than the degree of earthly sovereignty, eloquent prayers written in the utmost self-abasement, devotion, and humility, and the like of this. Afterwards he discussed other matters in the Persian language, and the form of it is this. Quoting, "O God, this is a letter which I wish to send to the king, and thou knowest that I have not desired aught of him save the display of his justice to thy people, and the showing forth of his favors to the dwellers of thy kingdom. And verily by my soul I have not desired aught save what thou hast desired, neither by thy might do I desire aught save what thou desirest. Perish that being which desireth of thee aught save thyself. And by thy glory, thy good pleasure is the limit of my hope, and thy will the extremity of my desire. Be merciful then, O God, to this poor soul who hath caught hold of the skirt of thy richness, and to this humble suppliant who calleth on thee, for thou art indeed the mighty, the great. Help, O God, His Majesty the King, to execute thy laws amongst thy servants, and to show forth thy justice amidst thy creatures, that he may rule over this sect as he ruleth over those who are beside them. Verily thou art the potent, the mighty, the wise. Agreeably to the permission and consent of the king of the age, this servant turneth from the place of the royal throne toward Iraq-i-Arab, and in that land abode 12 years. During the period of his sojourn there, no description of his condition was laid before the royal presence, neither did any representation go to foreign states. Relying upon God did he abide in that land, until a certain functionary came to Iraq, who on his arrival fell to designing the affliction of a company of poor unfortunates. Every day, beguiled by certain of the doctors of Persia, he persecuted these servants, although nothing prejudicial to church or state, or at variance with the principles and customs of their countrymen, had been observed in them. So this servant was moved by this reflection. May it not be that by reason of the deeds of the transgressors, some action at variance with the world-ordering counsel of the king should be engendered? Therefore was an epitome of the matter addressed to Mirza Saeed Khan, the Minister for Foreign Affairs, that he might submit it to the royal presence, and that it might be done according to that which the royal command might promulgate. A long while elapsed, and no command was issued, until matters reached such a state that it was to be feared that sedition might suddenly break out, and the blood of many be shed. Of necessity, for the protection of the servants of God, a certain number of the Babis appealed to the governor of Iraq. If the king will consider what has happened with just regard, it will become clear in the mirror of his luminous heart that what occurred was done from considerations of expediency, and that there was apparently no resource save this. The royal personage can bear witness and testify to this, that in whatever land there were some few of this sect, the fire of war and conflict was wont to be kindled by reason of the aggression of certain governors. But this transient one, after his arrival in Iraq, withheld all from sedition and strife, and the witness of the servant is his action, for all are aware and will testify that the multitude of this faction in Persia, at that time, was more than it had been before. Yet, notwithstanding this, none transgressed his proper bounds nor assailed anyone. It is nigh on 15 years that all continue tranquil, looking unto God and relying on Him, and bear patiently what hath come upon them, casting it on God. And after the arrival of this servant in this city, which is called Adrianople, certain of this community inquired concerning the meaning of victory. Divers answers were sent in reply, on one of which answers will be submitted on this page, so that it may become clear before the royal presence that this servant hath in view naught save peace and reform. And if some of the divine favors, which, without merit on my part, have been graciously bestowed on me, do not become evident and apparent, this much at least will be known, that God, in his abounding grace and undeserved mercy, hath not deprived this oppressed one of the ornament of reason. The form of words which was set forth on the meaning of victory is this: He is God, exalted is He. It hath been known that God, glorious is His mention, is sanctified from the world and what is therein, and that the meaning of victory is not this, that anyone should fight or strive with anyone. The Lord, if He doeth what He will, hath committed the kingdom of creation, both land and sea, into the hand of kings, and they are the manifestations of the divine power, according to the degrees of their rank. Verily He is the potent, the sovereign. But that which God, glorious is His mention, hath desired for Himself in the hearts of His servants, which are treasures of praise and love of the Lord, and stores of divine knowledge and wisdom, the will of the Eternal King hath ever been to purify the hearts of His servants from the promptings of the world and what is therein, so that they may be prepared for illumination by the effulgences of the Lord of the names and attributes. Therefore must no stranger find his way into the city of the heart, so that the incomparable friend may come unto his own place, that is, the effulgence of his names and attributes, not his essence, exalted is he, for that peerless king hath been and will be holy for everlasting above ascent or descent. Therefore today victory neither hath been nor will be in opposition to any one, nor strife with any person, but rather what is well-pleasing is that the cities of men's hearts, which are under the dominion of the hosts of selfishness and lust, should be subdued by the sword of the word of wisdom and exhortation. Everyone, then, who desireth victory, must first subdue the city of his own heart with the sword of spiritual truth and of the word, and must protect it from remembering aught beside God. Afterward, let him turn his regards toward the cities of others' hearts. This is what is intended by victory. Sedition hath never been, nor is pleasing to God, and that which certain ignorant persons formerly wrought was never approved. If he be slain for his good pleasure, verily it is better for you than that he should slay. Today the friends of God must appear in such fashion amidst God's servants, that by their actions they may lead unto all the pleasure of the land of glory. I swear by the Son of the Horizon of Holiness, but the friends of God never have regarded nor will regard the earth or its transitory riches. God hath never ever regarded the hearts of his servants, and this too is by reason of his most great favor, that perchance mortal souls may be cleansed and sanctified from earthly states, and may attain unto everlasting places. But that real king is in himself sufficient unto himself, and independent of all, neither doth any advantage accrue to him from the love of contingent beings, nor doth any hurt befall him from their hatred. All earthly places appear through him, and unto him return, and God singly and alone abideth in his own place, which is wholly above space and time, mention and utterance, sign, description and definition, height and depth. And none knoweth this save him, and whosoever hath knowledge of the book. There is no God but him, the mighty, the bountiful. Fini. But good deeds depend on this, that the royal person should himself look into that matter with just and gracious regard, and not be satisfied with the representations of certain persons unsupported by proof or evidence. We ask God to strengthen the king unto that which he willeth, and what he willeth should be the wish of the worlds. Afterwards they summoned the servant to Constantinople. We reached that city along with a number of poor unfortunates, and after our arrival did not hold intercourse with a single soul, for we had naught to say unto them, and there was no wish save that it should be clearly demonstrated by proof to all that this servant had no thought of sedition, and had never associated with the seditious. And by him, in praise of whose spirit the tongues of all things speak, to turn in any direction was difficult in consideration of certain circumstances, but these things were done for the protection of lives. Verily my Lord knoweth what is in my soul, and verily he is witness unto what I say. The just king is the shadow of God in the earth. All should take refuge under the shadow of his justice and rest in the shade of his favor. This is not the place for personalities or censures directed specifically against some apart from others, for the shadows tells of him who casteth a shadow. God, glorious is his mention, hath called himself the Lord of the worlds, for that he hath nurtured and doth nurture all. Exalted is his favor which hath preceded contingent beings, and his mercy which hath preceded the worlds. This is sufficiently clear, that whether right or wrong, according to the imagination of the people, this community have accepted as true and adopted the religion for which they are notorious, and that on this account they have foregone what they had, seeking after what is with God. And this same renunciation of life in the way of love for the merciful God is a faithful witness and an eloquent attest unto that whereunto they lay claim. Hath it ever been held that a reasonable man renounced his life without proof or evidence of the truth for that which he died? And if it be said, these people are mad, this too is very improbable, for it is not a thing confined to one or two persons, but rather have a great multitude of every class, inebriated with a quashar of divine wisdom, hastened with heart and soul to the place of martyrdom in the way of the friend. If these friends, who for God have foregone all save him, and who have poured forth life and wealth in his way, can be belied, then by what proof and evidence shall the truth of that which others assert concerning that wherein they are established in the presence of a king? The late Haji Syed Muhammad, may God exalt his station and overwhelm him in the depth of the ocean of his mercy and forgiveness, although he was of the most learned of the doctors of the age, and the most pious and austere of his contemporaries, and although the splendor of his worth was of such a degree that the tongues of all creatures spoke in praise and eulogy of him, and confidently asserted his asceticism and godliness, did nevertheless, in the war against the Russians, forego much good and turn back after a little contest, although he himself had decreed a holy war, and had set out from his native land with conspicuous ensign in support of the faith. Oh, would that the covering might be withdrawn, and that which is hidden from men's eyes might appear. But as to this sect, it is 20 years and more that they have been tormented by day and by night with the fierceness of the royal anger, and that they have been cast each one into a different land by the blast of the tempest of the king's wrath. How many children have been left fatherless? How many fathers have become childless? How many mothers have not dared, through fear and dread, to mourn over their slaughtered children? Many were the servants of God, who at eve were in the utmost wealth and opulence, and at dawn were beheld in the extreme of poverty and abasement. There is no land but hath been dyed with their blood, and no error whereunto their groanings have not arisen. And during these few years the arrows of affliction have rained down without intermission from the clouds of fate. Yet, notwithstanding all these visitations and afflictions, the fire of divine love is in such fashion kindled in their hearts, that were they all to be hewn into pieces, they would not forswear the love of the beloved of all the dwellers upon earth. Nay, rather with their whole souls do they yearn and hope for what may befall them in the way of God. This is the end of side 1, take 2, ending on page 67. Please turn the tape for continuation.